This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio or at venues around the city, and we get to listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes, and you might even find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, please make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Bahamas. I'm Megan Suma, and I'm here with host Benham Jones at WFUV. Benham, this was a really cool session because actually Bahamas and his bandmates who came into play today hadn't played yet together. And so this session was kind of off the cuff for them, but they came in and they absolutely delivered these songs from this new album. Talk to me about hearing this live session and getting to sit down with Afi and have a chat.
Yeah, like I had mentioned to Afi, I came in during some of the sound check and rehearsal and I couldn't really see into the studio. So I crept up on Jimmy, who's engineering and mixing. And I said, wait, is it really just a trio? Because it was just, it's so nice to have. And there are a lot of musicians who are incredible, and I'm not throwing shade on anybody, but it's nice to have people who just come in and know what they're doing and do this stuff. I'm not going to name an artist, but I have a friend who works for a studio in Nashville and had a very, very famous band in there. And they were in there for like 3 weeks. And he called me. He was like, yeah, I'm working on this session, but it's crazy. Like, the dudes actually don't know how to play any music. And they're waiting for they're waiting for the producer to come in and show them what's up. And I was like, that is truly insane. Fast forward to right now, and we got Bahamas who just rips them out.
Yeah.
And so much depth to the sound, so much control. And I kind of mentioned this when I talked to Afi, but I kind of judged the book by the cover a little bit. And all respect and love to Jack Johnson, and I know he is the founder of Brushfire Records. But my story about Jack Johnson is I arrived at FUV as a student in 2004. And I was just like a snotty punk kid. And I was like, I hate Jack Johnson. He's just too chill. He's just too chill. But he came in and he did a session here. And I was absolutely won over by how humane and incredibly deep and generous he was as a performer. I still don't always love the sound of Jack Johnson, but I appreciate the delivery. Bahamas kind of gave me the bait and switch because when the record started, I was like, oh, is this a Jack Johnson clone? are we going to Jack's zone? But once I let the record kind of stretch out, the depth of self-reflection and humor and identity and really cohesion across the entire record. It's not just songs to play around a campfire. This is like a whole sort of, he describes it as a world that involves his three daughters and his identity as someone who has left Toronto to go to Nova Scotia. It really is a very generous record, and I meant it, and I say it in the interview that I'm looking forward to going back and listening to his other 7 records.
Yeah. Yeah, he does have a big catalog of work, and this is obviously the latest project. So we're going to hear 3 live songs from Studio A. What is the first song that we're going to start with?
The first one that we are going to hear, oh yeah, he did start with the single. So this one is called The Bridge, and it maybe is the one that's pointed most towards this sort of classical folk, James Taylor, or you know, something more of the early 2000s, Jack Johnson, but still has a little bit of this, he talks a lot about water all over the record. And you could tell this is someone who, I mean, he's chilling by the beach in Nova Scotia, which I'm sure is very beautiful, but very, very cold. But you get a sense this is someone who likes to relax with the water.
To the bridge and let me walk upon the water. Take me to the bridge and let me walk upon the water. Oh child, don't say sorry. Though I might worry,
Let them do as they do. Let them find their own way. There's so much to be gained now than making your own mistakes. Take me to the bridge and let me walk upon the water, mama, now. Take me to the bridge and let me walk upon the water. Run free. So much to discover. You don't need me or your mother. Let them go where they go. Let them find their own way. I'm right here beside you to love and gently guide you. Take me to the bridge and let me walk upon the water. Take me to the bridge and let me walk upon the water, mama, now. Take me to the bridge and let me walk upon the water.
All right.
Benham Jones live in Studio A here with Bahamas. And we just heard a track off the new record. That one is called The Bridge. Thank you all so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So yeah, you're doing it as a trio right now. And I got to be honest, I'm just kind of getting familiar with your music. I listened to the brand new record a couple days ago and I listened to it several times since.
That's a good sign.
Yeah, it actually was a good sign. And at first, I wasn't buying it at the very kind of at the opening bells. And then the deeper I went in and how sort of self-reflexive all the lyrics are, it drew me kind of deep into the character of the story that kind of runs through the album. And then as I got to know and I looked back at the back catalog, I saw that same sort of humor and self-reflection over the rest of the discography. How are you feeling about your new record, the experience of making it now that it's live and out in the world?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably like most artists, I'm just happy to have it out because, it, you know, you sit on these things for so long. And believe it or not, even though I don't have a, you know, giant engine of pop market music marketing or anything behind me, it's sort of, it does take a long time to kind of plan these things out and get them sort of ready to put out. And so the whole time you're just sort of sitting there and you have a lot of opportunity to doubt the work. And I tend to just go with instinct. And, you know, if it feels good in the moment, that's usually a good sign. And it hasn't really failed me too much over the course of 7 albums. So, I love these songs and it's just great to be out playing them. I mean, this is the first thing that we've done. First, you're getting it first. So either it's fresh and it feels good or it's not rehearsed. It'll get better over time. But I don't know. It's just great to be playing music.
When you approach making a record or you get ready to it, did you have this particular batch of songs in mind and the sequence of it already laid out already? Or did you have like a whole bunch of songs? Were you trying to record a lot of material and then you whittle it down to what we end up with?
I previous to this, I had made a record in Nashville at a big commercial studio with great musicians. And that was just such a great experience that I just kind of came home and felt so energized that I just wanted to keep working. And so I called my friend Josh, who was playing drums there for us today. And I, booked some studio time. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I just wanted to be in the studio and just be creative, just be making things. And so I had a couple tracks that I had tried in Nashville that we didn't necessarily get definitive takes for. So we kind of had a starting place anyway. And we started with those tunes. And then I just felt so, so inspired by the experience. I would go home every night and kind of write something and work on it and then go back the next day. And, so those tracks kind of have that, freshness or intensity to it. It was really just a, a reaction to probably recording with a big band in Nashville that I sort of went 180 degrees in the other direction and worked with Josh at his studio, which is half the size of this room. And just the two of us in there kind of building up the tracks, you know. So he would play drums and I kind of would play everything else and we would just layer them up like that.
So it's just you two?
Yeah.
For the whole, every sound on the record, it's you and Josh.
That's it.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I was impressed when I first walked in and y'all were sound checking. I listened from the corner because I couldn't, it was a packed studio. Everyone was listening. I stepped over to Jimmy, our engineer. I said, is this really a trio? Because the sound is so full.
Oh, and cool.
The control and the deliberate nature of the way the bass is working with the guitar picking and stuff. I was hearing synthesizer parts kind of on in the ambient space, in the upstrokes.
Great.
So then to take it one step further and to know that it's kind of got that home recording experimentation in the bottle, just two of you doing it.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, we've never even rehearsed. That was the first time we've ever, Christine's played with me for years on the road, and she's certainly played on other recordings. But just because Josh and I live in Nova Scotia, which is on the far eastern side of Canada, and Christine lives in Toronto, and everyone's very busy doing multitude of different projects at any given time. So we flew to New York last night and basically just discussed what we were going to do today. And here we are. And these things are always living and breathing. You know, I'm not trying to do a photocopy of the album or we're doing another radio station this afternoon. Hope I'm allowed to say that.
You're allowed to say that.
Okay. Probably not as good as WFUV, but anyway, we're playing somewhere else. And I'm sure this afternoon the songs will be slightly different. You know, that's kind of the exciting part for me is just allowing, you know, as cliche as it sounds, to live in the moment and just to try and let the songs kind of tell you where you should go on any given day. And I feel lucky to be surrounded by just musicians of a caliber that kind of allow me to do that, you know.
Do you know what kind of band you're going to tour with when you do tour on the record? You said you're going to be heading to Europe eventually, right?
I'm going to Europe on Sunday, and I'm just going solo.
Okay.
I actually booked that tour long before we even knew that this album was coming out. I kind of booked the tour as a little bit of an eat, pray, love, you know, find myself. I would go to Europe and with my backpack and my guitar, and I would sort of return to my roots a little bit, and that was the idea. And then this album got scheduled for October. And so this ends up being the first tour that I'm doing kind of in support of this album, which is a little different. But thankfully, the audience that I've built up over the years is very, very willing to go wherever I want to go. I mean, for better or for worse, I've never had a hit song. And maybe early on in my career, I would have, you know, hoped for one or prayed for one. But now, you know, more than 15 years in, it couldn't have worked out better because it means that I can really do whatever the heck I want to.
For sure.
And there's definitely certain songs that are touchstones, and I still enjoy singing them, which is a good sign. They don't, you know, they're not like a burden or something like that. But yeah, I mean, I love playing solo, and I also love playing with the band. But the first thing I do is just go to Europe with my guitar, and it'll be like an episode of The Amazing Race. I'll be moving around.
Europe is still going to be the backpack and the guitar.
Yeah.
Eat, pray, love.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm doing. Yeah. It should be good.
Are you familiar with the... I don't know if I'd call it an economic theory or someone talked, it was 10,000 true fans. It's this idea that in this day and age of extreme democratization and the dissemination of media, the oversaturation, only way for true independent artists to survive are to have 10,000 true fans. Mm. And that is like a testament to the quality of their work to win over true fans who will follow every record. And just in you talking about the freedom and liberation that you've had as never having had a hit song, I'm just wondering a little bit about if you could just talk a little bit more about the experience of someone who's kind of on the precipice of you're here at FUV, you're doing a radio tour, you're going to Europe, but you said you've never had a hit. You made this record, just two of you in a friend's studio in Nova Scotia. Where do you feel the growth? Where do you want your career to grow to?
I mean, if I'm being completely honest, I never would have imagined to be sitting here with you. I never would have imagined to do half the stuff we've done. I am more than happy with my career as it is. I get to play the nicest venues basically everywhere, you know, beautiful theaters and performing arts centers. I'm sure it's a thrill to play at the hockey arenas and stuff like that too. But, you know, I don't know that my music would really suit that environment anyway. So I say that I never had a hit song, which is true. I've never had a radio hit or whatever. But something happened with the advent of streaming, and I know a lot of people have their gripes with it, as do I, and you know, there's a real sort of battle for fair remuneration and all that stuff, but for some reason, my music has performed so well on these streaming platforms. If there's a playlist with the word chill in it, I'm on there. You know, it's like, it's Sunday night chill, yoga chill, going out with the ladies and chilling before we go out chill or whatever. It's like, it's amazing how my music has just, once it starts to gain traction there, it starts to populate all over the website, and it's kind of hard to avoid, you know? And I probably sound like a Luddite because I don't really listen to music that way, but the rest of the world seems to, and that's really worked to my advantage. And in a way that's happened so organically, I've never, you know, I couldn't have calculated for it to be that way. And so in some ways it's that's the best possible way it could have worked out, really. And that's maybe circling back to what I said earlier, that's kind of led to having an audience that really is just like, in fact, one of your colleagues there, you know, came in and said, oh, I love this. I think it's the last track on my third record. And it's so slow and it's so boring and it's so long. And she's like, that's my favorite song, you know? And I guess that's what I mean. It seems like everyone has one of those, you know, it's track 8 on some album. And that's just made for a position for me that as a performer, it just feels, it's so generous of the audience to kind of give me that position. And then I can go solo, I can go with a small band like this, or I can take a bigger band and we can do all kinds of stuff, you know?
Amazing. I don't want to say that I set you up, but that is kind of the answer that I wanted to hear.
Is that right?
Well, I just, in this day and age when everyone's, you know, the sense of scale is so distorted and everyone believes it can be bigger and bigger, and to hear an artist feel self-satisfied, not just artistically, but in terms of the scale of fame and what it's allowed them to do, is inspiring. And it's counterintuitive to the narrative that most industries sell to us. When I listened to your music, I was like, oh, this is someone who is comfortable with the artistic identity that they've developed. They're not really chasing anything else right now.
All I'm chasing is the feeling that I get when I am creating something new, whether it's writing a song or, you know, working on a track in the studio or playing live in front of an audience. I think, I'm not sure what the most relatable analogy is, but it's sort of like surfing. I don't know if you've ever tried that, but, you know, it's a very humbling experience. And on those rare moments when you actually manage to stand up on the board, even if it's just for a few seconds, you're completely engaged with what you're doing, and yet you're not thinking about anything else. You are living in the moment. And so there's something there that happens for me with playing music that's a similar thing. And there's very few things in my life that have that quality. So I guess I'm always trying to put myself in a position to potentially reach that sort of state of whatever you want to call it. And some people might go on yoga retreats, and other people might do fly fishing and you know, any manner of things to try and get there. But that music certainly is that vehicle for me. And I'm fortunate. I don't know. I've before I was playing as Bahamas, I was working as a side musician and got to tour with amazing artists and really got an opportunity to tour all around the world and have a lot of experiences where there was a lot of sort of professional pressure, but nobody was looking at me. It was more just about, you know, musically, how to perform well, how to hang, how to be on tour, living in a tour bus with people that maybe you don't know so well, or maybe outside of the touring environment, you maybe wouldn't hang out with so much. So a lot of those formative years I got to sort of do with playing other people's music. And I feel like that did give me quite an advantage going into my own career.
Thank you for that. I mean, to have art and music made from a state of sincere, full engagement, like you're saying, like riding the wave, to have that then, especially because you're making pop tunes, you know, you're making like sort
you
of...
think so?
I would say that this is definitely, I mean, pop music writ large in a way. It's melodic. I saw Autechre two nights ago, like stodgy German noise. And it's full darkness except for the exit signs. So you have no, you're not allowed to move, actually. It's a very strange experience. But you're making pop tunes, but from a flow state of pure engagement, and the gift that that's giving a listening audience that is tempted to be in the state of infinite jest and distraction is, I don't know, you might be doing something to save a little bit of our consciousness here.
I mean, I think of someone like Adele or something like that. I mean, she's just undeniably a great singer. She can stand in one place for an hour and a half and do a whole show with no wardrobe changes. Maybe she does wardrobe changes. I don't know if she does. But I'm just saying her talent is so big and so obvious to anyone as soon as she starts singing that that's all you need. It's so captivating, you know. And I saw Chris Stapleton play a couple of years ago, and he had that same quality. The band just stood there the whole night. There was no pyrotechnics. There was nothing else. It was just the musicianship, the songwriting, and the singing, and those sort of simple, pure ingredients coming together in such a moving way that the show was just incredible. And so, yeah, if what I'm doing can have an ounce of that quality, then that feels honest and feels true. And I think if I tried to do something else, it would, you know what I mean? You just feel like a phony, and I think you would probably know it right away. So, yeah, thankfully, like I said, I got to experience some of these sort of professional hurdles younger, and that kind of set me up to put me in a position to just feel confident about what I'm doing now, you know?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Can we hear another tune?
Let's hear another tune.
All right. New music live in Studio A. It's Bahamas on FUV.
Only ever stood in the shadows of love. Only ever stood in the dark. Only ever knew what you wanted me to. A fire never reaching the spark. Let me down easy if you're letting me go. Let me think that love never ends. I could never be what you needed from me. Let me think that we can be friends. Oh, oh, hey, hey, now, mama. I could use a friend right now. Oh, oh, hey, hey, now, mama. Let me feel it all somehow. I only ever stood in the shadows of love. Only ever stood in the dark. Only ever knew what you wanted me to. A fire never reaching the spark. I could use a friend right now. Oh, oh, hey, hey, now, mama. Let me feel it all somehow.
This episode of FUV Live Sessions is brought to you by New York City Center, presenting Encore's The Wild Party, running March 18th through the 29th. Don't miss your chance to catch Michael John Lacusa's Broadway score back on stage, featuring Tony nominees Jasmine Amy Rogers, Adrian Warren, Jordan Donica, and more. Tickets start at $45. To get yours, visit nyctycenter.org/thewildparty. Now, let's get back to the show with Bahamas.
Benham Jones live with Bahamas in Studio A, performing new track Shadows from a brand new record. Thank you all again so much for being here. Now, like I said, I'm kind of just getting familiar with your music, so you'll have to excuse me if some of these references or inspirations are off base, but I want to ask and talk a little bit about Robert Palmer, maybe Randy Newman, and then for newer stuff, I was thinking a lot about Blake Mills as a contemporary who has similar tonal stuff on the guitar. But those three, I'm wondering if they hit it all with you.
I mean, certainly, you know, Blake Mills is as close to a modern guitar god as I think we have, you know, and it really has, I think, definitely had an influence on anybody who's kind of got their ear to their, even remotely to the ground. You know, he's so involved in producing other people's records. And also just as a guitar player, it's very challenging and very rewarding when you feel like you're kind of maybe part of something that isn't necessarily as derivative of Jimi Hendrix or Eric Clapton or some of the maybe guitar things that I totally admire and respect, but it's like, there's no part of me that ever wants to play the blues or on the guitar, you know, it just doesn't feel authentic. And so, you know, you're searching for something new on an instrument where it's seemingly everything's been done. And that's kind of the exciting part and the challenge. And I think Blake is definitely at the forefront of a lot of that. But yeah, Randy Newman, if I'm being completely honest, I'm not like super familiar with his, I mean, I know his tunes, but it's probably just the ones that everybody knows. You know, I haven't gone deep on that. But I do think there's something about the 70s, just singer-songwriter era in general. Like I always admired Neil Young's catalog from that period. Mostly just because there was seemingly no production on the records. You know, it's almost like a classical record or a bluegrass record where they just put the mics up and you're really just documenting the performance. And I think Neil will admit himself, he's not necessarily like the most technically proficient singer, but the song and his performance and everything transcends all that. And so the music industry, I don't know, it's just cool when somebody like that just is able to kind of cut through and reach an audience, and just, you know, and it, arguably it's just undeniable, you know. But I don't know, like there are certain singer-songwriters from the James Taylor, I like James Taylor a lot, and I know it's not the most deepest cut or whatever, you know, but same thing, like that's kind of what I was describing to the band before because we didn't rehearse. I was like, let's just do like a funky James Taylor thing today, you know. And that's kind of what we did. But I'm not, to be honest, like my musical influence is like the thing I listen to most is like, in terms of modern music, is hip hop. I like J. Cole a lot. I like Kanye. I don't know if you're still allowed to like Kanye's music, but.
You're not allowed, but okay. you are allowed.
Well, there's a few albums that I just like. I mostly just because lyrically I find hip hop is a genre that they seem to be able to sing about modernity and like the life that I'm living. They seem to be able to use that language in a way that sounds poetic and musical. It's really hard to say the word email as a singer-songwriter or like, you know what I mean? It's just somehow it takes you out of the song and almost audiences seem to be more willing. If I was up there talking, singing about being on a freight train and traveling around, like they'd be more willing to like buy into that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I understand. So, I mean, I definitely try and take inspiration more just from hip hop and modern R&B, just because they seem to be closer to the life I'm living.
Because you're really living that J. Cole and Kanye life.
Yeah, I'm not, but not. No, of course not. Like,
but we're all living the modern life.
But yeah, that's definitely the, you know, the soundtrack for the modern age is. That type of stuff for me, you know. Now, that being said, it feels like we're kind of rounding a corner maybe, and there's maybe room for the singer-songwriter to come back, you know. There's like, I know that at any given time there's only so much, you know, John Mayer's got the top spot or whatever, and then the rest of us have to fight for the pecking order underneath or whatever. But yeah, it feels like people are really welcoming singer-songwriters and just like, you know, just really quality sort of timeless songwriting. I don't know. Does it ever go to style? Hopefully not, you know?
So with that in mind, just the last name that I had mentioned, and I appreciate it. Thank you so much for taking me through that. It does give me a better understanding of where you are projecting from and writing from, trying to access the real experience you have. But Robert Palmer, as someone who exists in the groove, is a white guy who was like obsessed with the island vibes.
Interesting.
But also was extremely funny and self-aware, but wasn't scared to be like hot and sexy.
I don't know anything about Robert. Oh, I know, man. Simply Irresistible, and that's it. I got to check it out.
Are you for real?
Is there an album that I should start
with? You're truly blowing my mind. I mean, the first three Robert Palmer albums are required essential listening. And then he had like his like Joshua Tree, his hits package, his kick is a record called Clues.
Okay.
Which that has Johnny and Mary and Woke Up Laughing.
I really only know Simply Irresistible. That's the only thing I know.
Then today I give you a gift, and I'm also incredibly jealous that you get to discover the entire Robert Palmer discography. Because spiritually, and I believe that, you know, back before the discovery of fire, there were only like maybe there were like eight trees on earth and we were all monkeys sitting with each other.
Right.
Like I say, it's like you and Robert were in the same tree.
Yeah, yeah.
You share some DNA.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, definitely, I mean, you mentioned humor, and that's something that's been part of my music forever. I mean, since the first album, I have a song called Hockey Teeth about an old girlfriend I had with buck teeth. You know? And I was trying to write her a love song, and it just sort of came out all clunky and awkward. And, you know, she didn't think it was very funny, but it ultimately had a charm to it, you know? But yeah, I just think all the best stuff in life is like that. It has that combination. It's like that Chicago mixed popcorn that has a little bit of salty and sweet. You got to have both. If you only have one, if it's just, you're beautiful, if it's just that, I mean, with respect to James Blunt or whatever, but if
karaoke it's, favorite of mine,
you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like if it's too much of one thing, then it maybe doesn't have that, quality where you want to listen to it over and over again. Whereas a song like Willie Nelson's You Were Always On My Mind is like, it's like a devastatingly, just a heartbreaking song. But the way that it's delivered, and it's in a major key, and it's almost got a triumphant Chariots of Fire uplifting quality, like you leave the song feeling hopeful and like actually the future is brighter, even though the song is just so dark, you know? And so, yeah, I definitely relate to that and try, even whether it's conscious or not, a lot of the songs end up having that quality, you know? And something about humor kind of softens the blow a little bit of when you're trying to be brutally honest with difficult subjects.
We were talking a little bit off mic earlier, and I was just telling you about my weekend, but also sort of where I come from musically in New York. We had a scene here kind of in the mid-2000s. It was the Sidewalk Cafe, which was gave us like the Moldy Peaches and Adam Green, I guess, who was in the Moldy Peaches. I can't think of any other artists who are household names, but that was really our bread. I mean, Elliott Smith was also like would pass through and play Sidewalk. But that mix of sad and funny and hopeful, that whole shtick, kind of terminated around 2009, which is maybe when you started making records.
Yeah, I think I made my first record in 2008 and would have started, you know, touring and playing around and really sort of, at that point, that's all at Bahamas was all I was doing. Before that, I was just playing with different artists and you know, I was writing my own songs, but maybe the quality of the songs just wasn't really up to the level where it needed to be in order to sort of garner an audience or whatever. I'm not sure what else to say about that, but it's, a well-rounded song, a well-rounded book, a well-rounded anything sort of has a little bit of all these things. You know, you kind of want all those things, and the best things in life kind of generally kind of have that. And certainly, I mean, I don't know if you have kids, but it's like, that's what being a parent is like on any given day, on a random Tuesday, it's like you can experience the highest highs and the most devastating lows, and the swings are just so huge. It's like crypto current, emotional crypto or something. You know what I mean? It's like you just have to strap in and be along for the ride. And so trying to make music that reflects that a little bit is certainly important.
I don't have kids, but my sister does.
Okay.
And she's got three. So I've seen some of that mix of the extremely adorable, the incredibly powerful love, and then the absolutely detestable.
Yeah.
And just the...
I have three daughters.
It's
like...
You have a coven. You
it's
have
an
a
emotional
coven.
Roller coaster every day at our house, you know? So it's... I don't know. It's inspiring and terrifying, and it's the whole world, you know. It's my whole world. I don't expect anyone else to care about it, but it is, for me, it is the whole world, and it's just such a powerful energy. And so the songs kind of live in this orbit around that thing now, you know. And I'm sure the songs can't help but be affected by that.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And your fam. I'm also thinking now that when I'm seeing the songs live, one thing that I felt was so powerful about the record, even though you have all these, you know, it's only two of you, as you said, it's all these overdubs, kind of experimental home recording stuff. Mm-hmm. The vocals, except for when you're doubling or when you have extra harmonies, are fairly unaffected. Like they're mixed very in the front. Mm-hmm. And right now, seeing it live, I get to hear the lyrics and the vocals crystal clear. And I guess less of a question, more of an observation. The power of that, it draws me in and makes me want to know you as an artist more, just the narrative within the stories. Whereas, you know, when I hear other artists who just drown in the delay and reverb and I cannot understand what is saying, I can't get the humor that we've been talking about.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I mean, I kind of like both things. I don't know that I ever do that with my own songs or own voice. But certainly, like when I listen to Bon Iver or something, like I'm moved to that music, and then I have to realize, like, I have no idea what he's saying at all. And then you realize, like, this the emotional importance of this material is making it through in spite of that, you know, which is pretty cool. But yeah, I think more often than not, like I like the way Van Morrison albums are mixed. You know, the vocal is like just 10 times louder than everything else. And in some ways, the entire band is respectful of that. And the whole song is just built around the vocal, you know? And the irony is that, like, I've never felt super confident about my singing. Like, I never thought of myself as a singer. I always thought of myself as a guitar player. And then when you realize that actually the lyrics are starting to touch people and the singing just becomes that much more of a tool that you can use to kind of connect with people, you know? So I play less guitar and sing more, or try and put a little more effort into the singing, you know? But yeah, a lot of the things that I've been interested in the last few years are like, just kind of like I said earlier, things that don't have a lot of production, things that are just more of a document. I liked bluegrass music a lot. And yeah, there's no hiding behind reverb or production techniques.
And especially right now as a trio.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm hearing every single note each of you are playing. And actually, can you just shout out and introduce the band really quickly?
Absolutely. Josh Van Tassel on the drums, and he helps produce this record. And he's an amazing musician and engineer and producer, and plays a lot of different instruments. But he's playing drums today. And Christine Bougie, who normally plays guitar with me, and she plays lap steel. And she's really my guitar hero. I steal all my best licks off of her. And I can't even tell you why, but last week when we were getting ready to come here, I asked if she would come and play bass, and she was like, yeah, of course. She's like a musical Swiss Army knife. She can really play anything at a very high level. She's a great drummer. And so, yeah, she's ripping the bass today, and it sounded real good.
Blown away to know that you just conceptualized this yesterday. You know, it's like you said, you hadn't had any rehearsals, especially Christine here has some featured moments on the bass.
Yeah. Well, that's why, again, it's just a testament to the musicians that I get to work with. I'm just spoiled, you know, and so... Yeah, I don't know. It's always a thrill for me. And just being around great players, it's like it really takes the pressure off, you know.
Just a couple of last questions before we go. Any particular pieces of art, and you can use that however you want, that have moved you recently? Music you'd recommend, film? Yeah, then just please give us a laundry list and just focus on one, whatever.
Okay.
I'm just always curious where people are.
The one I think that's loomed the largest in my mind is Keith McNally's recent biography. It's called I Regret Almost Everything. And for those that don't know, he is an English-born New York restaurateur who built Balthazar and many, many other restaurants, and really was developed the restaurant scene in Soho and the Lower East Side, like at a time when there was just so much exciting stuff happening in culture, in music, in art, in politics, in entertainment, celebrity. Like, he was kind of at the center of it because he was building these really innovative and timeless restaurants. I don't know, the way that he writes is so honest, and he writes about the failure of his first marriage and his second marriage and his children, and, you know, just feeling just his inadequacies of a man, as a man. I don't know if it says more about me than it does about him that I so connect with this book or whatever, but yeah, he's reflecting on a very full life, you know? And so that was pretty moving. And then, yeah, like I mentioned when we were off camera there, I was watching this Die Antwoord. I don't even know if that's how you pronounce it.
I think you got it. Yeah.
South African hip-hop duo, this couple that, you know, kind of appropriated South African redneck culture to some degree, or at least that's kind of what the movie portrays, and or the documentary. And they, you know, I think they was around 2010 when they came together, and just the virality of what they were doing kind of just went off in a way that was totally uncontrollable. You couldn't plan this sort of thing, no matter how much of a marketing budget you had. No one had ever seen anything like that. And it's kind of scary and it's freaky, but it just has like such a distinct aesthetic, and their ability to sort of execute this vision on a pretty high level, even when they had no money and no resources, like they're hand painting everything and making their own costumes and really just have such a vision for what they're doing. I just found that really, really inspiring. Musically, like, I don't know if there's any real touchstones between what I'm doing and what they would be doing. But again, it's like, it's the same as listening to J. Cole or something like that. Like, I can draw inspiration from all those things, even though I have no desire to make a hip hop record or whatever.
In American culture, we have the Insane Clown Posse as a similar analog.
It's funny you mention that. I was probably the right age to be into Insane Clown Posse when they came out, and managed to, you know, circumnavigate that.
I think for my 40th birthday next year, I'm going to go to the gathering of, of the Juggalos. That's what I'm going to do. So, thank you so much. Those are two great recommendations. Do you spend a lot of time in New York?
No, I'd love to spend more. I was supposed to have a day off tomorrow, and then there was apparently something in Boston. They don't have their own musicians there, so I got to go up there after this and help them out.
Damn, because I was going to say it'd be fun to do like a McNally tour in light of the book and hit.
I tried to go last night, and they wouldn't take a reservation the last minute. You know, so maybe if I was by myself, I could have sat at the bar or something, but I was with the band, and we wanted to have dinner together. So we found, thankfully, you guys aren't short on good restaurants here in New York, so we had a good spot.
Well, thank you so much. Good luck with the rest of the radio tour. Good luck in Europe. Thank you to the full band for being here. Truly a pleasure. And like I said, I'm kind of new to your music, but I love this new record, and I look forward to going back and listening to the other 7 records.
Check out Sad Hunk and Earth Tones. That's my tip to you, all right?
All right. Thank you so much. Live in Studio A with Bahamas, this has been Benham Jones having a chat with Afy. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. New music from Bahamas in Studio A. This is Ready for a New Thing on FUV.
I've had a real good time, but now I gotta say all my wine, I'll say I have an early flight. I know I'm not helping myself. No use being somebody else. I think you know what I mean. With 5 a.m. I'm doing things differently. Not who I was back then, but I'm not who I wanna be. I know I'm just hurting myself. No use being somebody else. Think you know what I mean. Time to time again that I'm ready for a new thing. I get to thinking from time to time again that I'm ready for a new thing. I get to thinking from time to time again that I'm ready for a new thing. I get to thinking time to time again that I'm ready for a new thing.
That was Bahamas performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to Afy and his band for joining us in our studio and to Brushfire Records. Thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Aaron Merriman, and Nadia Garriga. Our FUV Live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producers for this episode were Cadiz Salazar and Gwen Taylor. Megan Suma is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV Live Sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday. If you like what you hear, please rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions on WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host, Benham Jones.